Section 1 of Mental Efficiency. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Ruth Golding. Mental Efficiency and Other Hints to Men and Women by Arnold Bennett. Section 1. Mental Efficiency, The Appeal. If there is any virtue in advertisements, and a journalist should be the last person to say that there is not, the American nation is rapidly reaching a state of physical efficiency of which the world has probably not seen the like since Sparta. In all the American newspapers and all the American monthlies are innumerable illustrated announcements of physical culture specialists, who guarantee to make all the organs of the body perform their duties with the mighty precision of a 60-horsepower motor car that never breaks down. I saw a book the other day written by one of these specialists to show how perfect health could be attained by devoting a quarter of an hour a day to certain exercises. The advertisements multiply and increase in size. They cost a great deal of money. Therefore, they must bring in a great deal of business. Therefore, vast numbers of people must be worried about the non-efficiency of their bodies and on the way to achieve efficiency. In our more modest British fashion, we have the same phenomenon in England, and it is growing. Our muscles are growing also. Surprise a man in his bedroom of a morning, and you will find him lying on his back on the floor, or standing on his head, or whirling clubs, in pursuit of physical efficiency. I remember that once I went in for physical efficiency myself. I too lay on the floor, my delicate epidermis separated from the carpet by only the thinnest of garments, and I contorted myself according to the 15 diagrams of a large chart believed to be the Magna Carta of physical efficiency, daily after shaving. In 3 weeks, my collars would not meet round my prize-fighter's neck. My hosier reaped immense profits, and I came to the conclusion that I had carried physical efficiency quite far enough. A strange thing, was it not, that I never had the idea of devoting a quarter of an hour a day after shaving to the pursuit of mental efficiency. The average body is a pretty complicated affair, sadly out of order, but happily susceptible to culture. The average mind is vastly more complicated, not less sadly out of order, but perhaps even more susceptible to culture. We compare our arms to the arms of the gentleman illustrated in the physical efficiency advertisement, and we murmur to ourselves the classic phrase, "This will never do," and we set about developing the muscles of our arms until we can show them off, through a frock coat, to women at afternoon tea. But it does not, perhaps, occur to us that the mind has its muscles, and a lot of apparatus besides, and that these invisible yet paramount mental organs are far less efficient than they ought to be, that some of them are atrophied, others starved, others out of shape, etc. A man of sedentary occupation goes for a very long walk on Easter Monday, and in the evening is so exhausted that he can scarcely eat. He wakes up to the inefficiency of his body, caused by his neglect of it, and he is so shocked that he determines on remedial measures. Either he will walk to the office, or he will play golf, or he will execute the post-shaving exercises. But let the same man, after a prolonged sedentary course of newspapers, magazines, and novels, take his mind out for a stiff climb among the rocks of a scientific, philosophic, or artistic subject. What will he do? Will he stay out all day and return in the evening, too tired even to read his paper? Not he. It is 10 to 1 that, finding himself puffing for breath after a quarter of an hour, he won't even persist till he gets his second wind, but will come back at once. Will he remark with genuine concern that his mind is sadly out of condition, and that he really must do something to get it into order? Not he. It is 100 to 1 that he will tranquilly accept the status quo without shame and without very poignant regret. Do I make my meaning clear? I say without a very poignant regret, because a certain vague regret is indubitably caused by realizing that one is handicapped by a mental inefficiency which might, without too much difficulty, be cured. That vague regret exudes like a vapour from the more cultivated section of the public. It is to be detected everywhere, and especially among people who are near the halfway house of life. They perceive the existence of immense quantities of knowledge, not the smallest particle of which will they ever make their own. They stroll forth from their orderly dwellings on a starlit night and feel dimly the wonder of the heavens. But the still small voice is telling them that, though they have read in a newspaper that there are 50,000 stars in the Pleiades, they cannot even point to the Pleiades in the sky. How they would like to grasp the significance of the nebula theory, the most overwhelming of all theories. And the years are passing, and there are 24 hours in every day, out of which they work only 6 or 7, and it needs only an impulse, an effort, a system, in order gradually to cure the mind of its slackness, to give tone to its muscles, and to enable it to grapple with the splendours of knowledge and sensation that await it. But the regret is not poignant enough. They do nothing. They go on doing nothing. It is as though they passed for ever along the length of an endless table filled with delicacies and could not stretch out a hand to seize. Do I exaggerate? Is there not deep in the consciousness of most of us a mournful feeling that our minds are like the liver of the advertisement, sluggish, and that for the sluggishness of our minds there is the excuse neither of incompetence, nor of lack of time, nor of lack of opportunity, nor of lack of means? Why does not some mental efficiency specialist come forward and show us how to make our minds do the work which our minds are certainly capable of doing? I do not mean a quack. All the physical efficiency specialists who advertise largely are not quacks. Some of them achieve very genuine results. If a course of treatment can be devised for the body, a course of treatment can be devised for the mind. Thus we might realize some of the ambitions which all of us cherish in regard to the utilization in our spare time of that magnificent machine which we allow to rust within our craniums.